The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Now it's time to think and discern. This is Bob Burney Live.
I don't think anyone would disagree that much of the world is in absolute panic from the coronavirus. And because of that, I am absolutely delighted to welcome to the program Dr. Zach Jenkins, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice at Cedarville University. Dr. Jenkins, I know you're incredibly busy. You are in great demand for interviews, so thank you for taking some time for us today.
Absolutely.
I'm just curious, and I want to just cut to the chase. We're hearing all of these estimates of possibly hundreds of thousands. I've even read estimates as early as this morning that millions may die from the coronavirus. And then, again, I am not an expert about the farthest thing from it. But from what I can gather, the closest figures I can come up with is worldwide, about 6,000 people have died so far, 156,000 have been infected worldwide. And from the seasonal flu, somewhere between 300,000 and 600,000 people die just from the seasonal flu. So my first question is the panic that the world is experiencing justified with this particular strain of the flu?
So the coronavirus is, it's a respiratory virus. It's actually a different family of viruses
right.
than what like influenza is, your typical flu. But the real concern with this is it's about twice as infectious as normal flu is, meaning that the flu typically may infect maybe 1 to 2 people, and on average you're looking at least 2 to 3 people with the coronavirus. The concern is that the mortality rate is much, much higher on average than when you look at the flu. So the estimated mortality rate tends to be about arguably 2.5 to 3.5. But you see some debate across the stage of the world as we learn some more information. The mortality rate in Italy right now, for example, is very, very high. It's around 4%. So if you really kind of think about what our population is in the United States or even in Ohio as an example, I was actually punching some numbers when I was speaking with my wife yesterday. And
are you there, Dr. Jenkins? Ah, he's on a cell phone in the mountains somewhere. I was afraid of this. Dr. Jenkins, are you still there? Dr. Jenkins.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, you faded out. I'm sorry. You said you were punching some numbers, and we lost you after that.
I apologize. Yes, so if you punch some numbers and kind of estimate based on the projections that they're saying, there are potentially hundreds of thousands of people at risk just within Ohio alone.
Okay, I get that, and I read that, and you're the expert, and I'm not. But China, with 1 billion people, it seems that it has peaked and is rapidly declining, and even with the hundreds of millions of people in China, worldwide we have 5,800 deaths. So that's I'm just having a hard time grasping
sure.
the projections that there. Are being made, considering the history that we have with China, South Korea, and even Italy, which peaked. Many people think it peaked yesterday and is beginning to decline. Just that's what I'm having a hard time understanding is the projections with what we know that has
sure.
already occurred in China.
So the biggest rate limiting factor that we're looking at right now is the data that came out of China isn't necessarily the complete picture. There have been a lot of concerns on the world stage. Even the World Health Organization has pointed out that some of that data, it may not be the most reliable. So each and every day, we kind of have to adjust some of these numbers as we're anticipating what we're dealing with. To put it in perspective, so we have 100, and I think I looked earlier, about 170,000 cases we've identified worldwide.
Yeah.
But those are just the people that have been tested. And one of the big things we run into is testing is not widely available.
Yeah.
When you look at third world countries or rural locations, for example, they really can't get tested at all. So the amount of people that probably are carrying this and don't realize it is pretty high, and there's a fair chance that a lot of people that think they may have the run-of-the-mill cold or typical seasonal viruses that aren't causing major symptoms may not realize they're carrying this. So our elderly patients and those with more medical conditions that are serious are at a much higher
sure.
risk of issues with this virus.
All right.
About 80% of people aren't going to have anything serious come from this.
About 80% are not going to be serious, and probably 97%, even if they get sick, will recover, correct?
That's correct.
We're hearing a lot here in Ohio about flattening the curve. Dr. Acton has been talking about that every day now for a week. What do they mean by flattening the curve?
So if we kind of take a look at Italy right now, there's actually just an article they published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And essentially what they describe is a case where their medical resources are so strapped right now, they don't have the ability to actually provide this normal standard of care that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So in the United States, we have about 160,000 ventilators that are available currently for all patients, and then about 45,000 ICU beds. So in a normal flu season, in a normal pneumonia season like we're dealing with right now, and it's actually been a particularly bad flu season, as you pointed out,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those resources are already being utilized.
Right.
And that's notwithstanding issues we have with heart attacks and strokes that you would typically see in all other sorts of medical conditions that may require an ICU bed. So the concern is with an influx of patients with the coronavirus, and it seems to be about 16% of ICU beds in Italy from the data, we would start pushing some of those patients that may need other beds out of the ICU and may not have a lot of beds available. And that's the real concern, because Italy right now, they're faced with decisions about basically who lives and who dies.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the mother of two children who has some conditions, an 80-year-old patient who has a lot of conditions?
Yeah.
I mean, those are choices no one wants to make.
Right.
When we talk about flattening the curve, it's really about trying to delay how quickly this spreads.
All right.
So a lot of those initiatives being rolled out, that's kind of the goal.
The state of Ohio obviously has taken extreme measures. There's no debate on that. You're out of town, but I assume you've heard that all gymnasiums, theaters are shut down, all restaurants are shut down except for carryout and so forth. In your professional opinion, and as a Christian that is not prone to panic, because you trust in Christ and his promises, do you, in your professional opinion, believe that the extreme measures that have been taken are justified?
So I would say, based on the available data, there seems to be a legitimate reason to be concerned enough to roll out some of these initiatives. Now, what I can't say is whether all these things are completely necessary. That's kind of hard to tell. And I think one of the leading infectious disease experts in the country has been working with the CDC pointed out that this is one of those cases where we can kind of look backwards and say, well, we didn't do enough, or maybe we did too much.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, when the data that you have tends to imply that some of these decisions could save thousands of lives, that's why some of these initiatives are being taken. And these are all normal in the event of a pandemic to kind of consider. We talk about this a lot with emergency preparedness. This just happens to be the first thing we really dealt with since the early 20th century.
So you're not shocked by the extraordinary measures that have been taken by the federal government and state governments like Ohio?
You know, I'm not, to be honest with you. For my students, I work a lot with some other area universities where I teach. And we actually held an outbreak simulation to talk about training medical professional students for this kind of event. And these things that you're seeing right now, we even had those things play out in our case. So these are all natural things that happen when that emergency response system can get triggered. And as we get more data, some of these things we're going to figure out maybe were too much and we can scale them back.
Mm-hmm.
So that duration kind of changes.
All right. And very quickly, I know our time is basically up. How long do you think it's going to be before this peaks and the crisis is basically over? How long?
So the best that we can tell is that really when we're looking at our data out of China, that it may be about mid-May, if it's really kind of modeling what occurred in China. But as I've kind of mentioned, some of that data is a little bit unreliable.
Yeah.
And that creates some challenges for us when we're trying to interpret that.
All right, Dr. Zach Jenkins, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice at Cedarville University. Again, Dr. Jenkins, I know you're incredibly busy, and I'm very, very grateful that you gave us some of your professional time today. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. I'm happy to help.
All right. Dr. Zach Jenkins, Associate Professor of Pharmacy Practice at Cedarville University. Quick break. We'll be back.
Today's news, God's Word, and your thoughts. This is Bob Burney Live.
Just a couple of updates if you have not heard. Governor DeWine and Ohio's Secretary of State have postponed tomorrow's primary election until June. A whole lot of the things the governor has done, I'm not going to question. They have information I don't have. And I think it's very inappropriate at a time of crisis to constantly second guess people in leadership that are making decisions with information that we don't have. I know that from being a pastor for 25 years. In 25 years of pastoring, there were several very difficult decisions that the leadership team of the church had to make. And we considered all the issues, we prayed about it, and made the decision. And every time that we made a difficult and controversial decision, we had people get all bent out of shape. We had people leave the church. And they had no clue about the information that we had or our real motives behind making those decisions. So I'm very sympathetic to people in leadership. I'm sympathetic to our governor. I am grateful that I'm not in the position making the decisions that he's making. I'm just very grateful. To me, as a layman, looking at the traditional seasonal flu and the number of people who die, it all seems like an overreaction to me. And then I have a professional on the air, as I did in the last segment, who is a professional, a Christian, a Bible believer, who says, you know, with the scientific models, with the projections, they're probably doing the right thing. So just be careful in running off half-cocked. You know, if you're an LTD, you don't do that. We who are LTDs think about things. We analyze them. We listen. We don't run off half-cocked with knee-jerk reactions. And so many people are doing that concerning what the governor's doing with restaurants and so on and so forth. Again, as a layman who is clueless on most of this stuff. It seems to be a severe overreaction. But I don't know. But the election, I really do believe that's wrong. And it may be illegal. It may be illegal, and the Secretary of State has already filed a lawsuit basically against himself in order to protect himself from other lawsuits, which are certainly going to come about. I think it would have been possible to hold the election tomorrow and just be careful and cautious. I just think it's an extraordinary action that I personally don't think it's justified. And it gives an advantage to the candidates that are more well-funded, the candidates who are supported by the party hierarchy here in the state of Ohio, rather than the grassroots independent candidates who often are the best candidates. And they've been out going door to door, knocking on doors, raising money, and they have exhausted all of their financial resources looking to the election tomorrow. Now, since it's been postponed until June, the whole ad campaign is going to have to be resurrected when we get to mid-May, end of May. You see what I'm saying? And the candidates that are being bankrolled by the wealthy and by the political parties are going to be at a very distinct advantage over the grassroots candidates who may be the best candidates. So the health things, the closing of public places, I'm going to roll with it, going to accept it, and just trust that these are the best decisions for all of us here in the state of Ohio. The moving of the election, though, I just personally have a problem with it, and this is not over. People in the legislature are not going to be happy with this, and I see a huge amount of lawsuits coming up over this decision, and I just think it's going to hurt the election process here in the state of Ohio. I do. I understand the reasoning. I get that, but. And again, this is just my personal editorial opinion. For whatever that's worth, and that's probably not much, I just think it's wrong. Your thoughts? I'd love to hear from you. 877-BOB-LIVE, 877-262-5483. By the way, if you have friends and family in the Washington, D.C. area, I am planning on guest hosting tomorrow afternoon and Wednesday afternoon in Washington, D.C., as well as here.